curiosity, they studied their host. In profile, his face, with its short, dark beard, was aquiline and stern. The eyes, which had so impressed the manager, seemed now to be a cold grey-blue. The thick brown hair, flecked slightly with grey, was brushed back from a broad forehead. His hands were large and white and capable. The hands of a man who knew what he wanted, knew how to get it, and got it. The Count advanced first to the American, holding out his hand. "Mr. Hocking, I believe." The American shook the proffered hand, while the two Germans looked at him with sudden interest. As the head of the great American Cotton Trust, worth more in millions than he could count, he was entitled to their respect. The Count turned to the taller of the two Germans. "Herr Steinmann, is it not?" The man, whose interest in German coal was hardly less well known than Hocking's in cotton, bowed stiffly. "And Herr von Gratz?" The Count turned to the last member of the party and shook hands. Von Gratz's name in the steel trade in Central Europe was one to conjure with. "The nations of the world have recently been engaged in a performance of unrivaled stupidity," said the Count. "And when idiots get busy on a large scale, it is time for clever men to step in. That is the raison d'être for this little dinner. Gentlemen, I claim that we four are sufficiently international to be able to disregard any stupid and petty feelings about this country and that country, and to regard the world outlook from one point of view only, our own." As the gaunt American gave a hoarse chuckle, the head waiter opened the door, and the four men sat down to dine. Finally, the coffee had been handed round, and the door closed behind the waiter. Now, as the Count carefully cut the end of his cigar, he knew that the hardest part of the evening was in front of him. "Gentlemen, we are all men of business." He turned to the two Germans. "Though the Central Powers have been beaten by America and France and Britain, I believe it is neither France nor America with whom you two gentlemen desire another round. Britain is Germany's main enemy." Both Germans grunted assent. The Count turned to the American. "Mr. Hocking, I have reason to believe that you personally do not love the British." "I don't see what my private feelings have to do with it, but you are correct in your belief." "Good. Gentlemen, what I am about to put before you is the defeat of Britain. A defeat more utter and complete than if she had lost the war. Don't think that I am proposing this merely through motives of revenge. We are businessmen, and revenge is worth our while only if it pays. This will pay. There is a force in Britain which, if harnessed and led properly, will result in millions coming to you. Harness that force, gentlemen, and use it for your own ends. Not only will you humble that cursed country to the dirt, but you will taste of power such as few men have tasted before." The Count stood up, his eyes blazing. "And I will do it for you." He resumed his seat and leaned forward, glancing at the intent faces of his audience. Then he began to speak. 10 minutes later, he pushed back his chair. "There is my proposal, gentlemen, in a nutshell. What is your answer?" He rose and stood by the fire with his back to them. For several minutes, no one spoke. The three men were looking at the hands he had given them. What matter that only a master criminal could have conceived such a game? The only question which occupied their minds was whether he could carry it through. The American leaned back and stretched his legs. "Count, you know who we are and what we're worth and all about us. Are you disposed to be a little more communicative about yourself? If we agree to come in on this hand, it's going to cost big money. The handling of that money is with you. Well, who are you?" Von Gratz and Steinemann nodded in agreement.